and for that ever-entertaining program, Eric Hawley's Brain Damage. You better play some Radio Moscow for me today. I always listen to it on the way home, as I listen to the rest of Eric Hawley's inventive work. So stay tuned. If you're not doing anything, relax and have a pleasant evening.
Stardate November 10th. The planet Mars was faint and relatively inconspicuous earlier this year, on the far side of the Sun from Earth. Now Earth and its faster orbit is about to catch up to Mars. Traveling at 18 miles per second in orbit, we've taken all this year to come around to the same side of the Sun as the red planet. By the end of this month, Mars will be in opposition to the Sun, or opposite the Sun as seen from Earth. In other words, we'll be flying between the Sun and Mars. As a result, the planet's now nearly at its brightest and most conspicuous in our sky. It already outshines all the stars. Mars now appears as a fiery red object ascending in the east soon after the end of evening twilight. It lies in front of the constellation Taurus, whose brightest star Aldebaran shines more faintly than Mars, but also with a reddish color. This will be the last time in the 20th century that Mars will shine so brilliantly and be so well-placed for observers at our latitudes. You might remember the wonderful 1988 opposition of Mars. Then the planet reached its perihelion, or closest point to the Sun, not long before Earth swept between the Sun and Mars. Mars was closer to the Sun then, so it was also closer than usual to us. This year, the red planet will be 31% farther away than it was at opposition 2 years ago. But as seen from the northern hemisphere, it's higher in the sky now. Mars will look better in our sky this fall than it will again until the year 2003. Our program is Stardate. It's written and produced by Deborah Bird for the University of Texas McDonald Observatory in Austin, Texas. And for the McDonald Observatory, I'm Joel Block.
Return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
This is your program, Moscow Mailbag. And here is Joe Adamoff to answer your questions. The first one comes from Henry Poe of East Northport, New York. I assume your country has the usual files, photos, and reports of UFOs in the USSR. Has the USSR ever compared notes with the United States and other countries on this subject?
You know, we have many groups and scientific societies that collect and process data on UFOs. Perhaps the better-known one is the UFO Center under Vladimir Ajaja. He's a doctor of philosophy. Last year, they received reports of several thousand sightings. Now, what intrigues me is that there are witnesses and witness accounts of people being whisked off by UFOs and completely disappearing. Somehow, I just simply cannot get myself to believe this. Nevertheless, to answer your question, the center now has a group in charge of international contacts. They told me they've just started and are in the stage of beginning to contact their opposite numbers in several countries. So I suppose such exchanges, once they get going, ought to be useful.
Dan Coffey, Jr. of South Portland, Maine. What is the maximum penalty for drug abuse in the Soviet Union?
My lawyer friend tells me that keeping, transporting, without the aim of selling the drug, is punishable by a term of up to 3 years. Making drugs carries a sentence of up to 10 years. If you're caught a second time, a producer or pusher may get a sentence of up to 15 years. But, you know, we have anonymous medical treatment for drug addicts, and it's specially made anonymous, so whoever comes does not have to be afraid of the law. And let me tell you that many do apply for this treatment.
Dan asks, what do Servant newspapers report?
What don't they report? A wide range of home news, parliamentary debates, every aspect of the economic reform, no end of opinions, suggestions, reports on shortcomings, and very, very many articles of a critical nature. Some people say there's too much criticism of everything. There should be more concrete plans and ways of putting things right. There are also regular reports on fighting crime, crime statistics, especially organized crime. Then, of course, there are the stories on international events, analyses of trouble spots in the world. By and large, I'd say today the reader is well informed. And last but not least, there's sports, a bit of satire once in a while, television and radio programs, and, of course, the weather.
Do Soviet papers get delivered to your home?
Yes, they do, but unlike your country, they're delivered through the mail. Lately, they started bringing my Sunday papers on Monday. How do you like that? They say they're not enough postmen, or I really should say postwomen.
Do people also crowd around stands with papers posted on them?
There are stands with papers on them, but the crowds around these stands, I wouldn't say there are any crowds. You see the crowds around notices, bulletins, and informal papers put out by a host of societies on the wall of, say, Moscow News, a very popular newspaper. That's where there's always a crowd, and that crowd stands there late into the evening. They don't simply read, but hold heated discussions. Somebody called it the Hyde Park Corner of Moscow. If you've been to London, you probably know what Hyde Park Corner is. That's where people get up on soapboxes and advocate this or that cause.
Edra Giuliani of Fallbrook, California. Please, Joe, explain if what the Canadian magazine Northern Neighbors wrote about your free medical service is true. The eminent Dr. Abel Agunbegyan really shook Soviet people when he revealed total yearly spending on health care to be negligible.
Well, first of all, I'd like to say I'm very sorry for answering your question so late. You know, I highly respect Dr. Agunbegyan. He's one of our top economists. As for how much we spend almost three times less on health care than does the United States. If you take, say, the, I don't know what to call it, the technical equipment, the instruments per hospital bed, we only have 15% of the United States level. There's a drastic lack of disposable syringes, of medicines. A large percentage of our hospitals in the rural areas have no sewage or running water. It's hard to buy such simple things as mustard plasters or even a thermometer. Our child mortality rate is high, and cardiovascular and cancer-related diseases are not decreasing. It sometimes takes something like 8 to 10 years to master new technology, whereas in other countries it takes anywhere from a year to a year and a half. But, you know, on the other hand, there are things that we can be proud of, like the microsurgery of the eye, where eye operations are performed on a conveyor belt method, and very, very successfully. Professor Fyodorov is world famous. His team, would you believe it, performs something like 200,000 operations a year, and many of these operations are on foreigners. They have a ship which they charted. It sails to many parts of the world and acts as a sort of floating hospital. Then there's Dr. Yelizarov. He's famous for his method of knitting broken bones. He's actually a wizard.
Then how do millions get care, which they obviously do receive? They get it by paying for it. While people slip a ruble to an ordinary nurse, 5 rubles to a specialized nurse who won't give you medicine or treatment prescribed by the doctor unless you fork over, and tens of rubles, can rise to hundreds, for the doctor or surgeon who treats you.
Well, that's what the Canadian paper wrote, and I'm afraid that all this is absolutely correct. It is no exaggeration. There is a lack of nurses and orderlies, and unless you do fork over, you will not expect, pardon me, to get your pan taken out of the ward if you can't get up, or your linen changed. But even that sometimes doesn't help because there are just simply not enough nurses, not enough orderlies. Their pay is too low and the work difficult. And taking money for operations or consultations is not uncommon.
Soviet people want to pay for their hospital care, writes the Canadian paper Northern Neighbor.
Well, that's only natural because the quality of hospital care is very low. Though I personally do believe in free medical care, especially for the lower paid brackets. You see, it's only natural. People will often want to pay a modest sum and get the aid and attention that they actually need. I was telling you about the microsurgery of the eye. They, incidentally, officially charge, but a very modest sum for an eye operation, something like $80, your money. And this allows them to offer qualitative aid and services, which you wouldn't get elsewhere.
The medical profession is staffed with men and women who are incompetent.
Well, yes, not all are incompetent, but many are, unfortunately. Some write scientific papers, which nobody needs. And of late, something like 1,600 healthcare workers were taken to court for bribes, for charging patients, and for plain ordinary theft. Many doctors from the local clinics are mainly engaged in what I call writing out sick leaves.
Now, a question from Edward Rothstein of Baltimore, Maryland. What is the status of relations between the Soviet Union and North Korea?
You know, after we established diplomatic relations with South Korea, our relations with North Korea have deteriorated. The North Korean papers write that we have betrayed North Korea, don't you know? That recognizing South Korea was treachery. They said they will square accounts with the USSR for recognizing 2 Koreas. They write that the Soviet Union has entered into a deal with the United States and South Korea for dollars. The paper further writes that the Treaty on Alliance between my country and North Korea has lost its force. North Korea refuses to abide by the Treaty on Cooperation in the military sphere and is undertaking steps to produce certain weapons itself. What that means, I really don't know. They accuse us of selling the trust and dignity of an ally and of wanting to be with our American friends. I'm afraid their further behavior is unpredictable.
Dr. George Novak of Washington, D.C. I heard on the European Journal television program that 3 million Russian unskilled workers will be coming to Switzerland and other countries for work.
There are many rumors about a flood of Soviet labor invading Europe, but I'm afraid it's only a rumor. Yes, we are about to adopt a law on freedom of entry and exit. And although this law has not as yet been adopted, something like 500,000 Soviet citizens will emigrate this year. As for Switzerland, which you mentioned, Dr. Novak, the Swiss embassy here in Moscow said it will issue visas only to those who can prove that they're going as tourists and have enough hard currency on them. In other words, each person will have to show a tidy sum of convertible money. And the Tribune de Genève wrote, "The chances are nil for those who in the nearest months want to leave the Soviet Union and find a job in Switzerland." You heard that. The chances are nil. and there'll also be little chance of getting political asylum. So you see, Switzerland is one of the first to adopt strict limits. But I don't have to go far for an example. You in the States have strict quotas on immigration, too.
David Keith Callender of Richmond, Kentucky. I would like to know what the Soviet Union thinks of German unification.
I think the fact that unification became possible is something that the world owes to Mr. Gorbachev. And this is no exaggeration. His new thinking, his scrapping the Brezhnev Doctrine, his letting the countries adopt the governments of their choice. This applies not only to Germany. The unification of Germany, I feel, is the beginning of a new post-war epoch. We must give due to people in my country and in Germany who, remembering the losses of the past war, overcame bitterness, overcame prejudice, and worked for a peaceful and worthy solution of the German problem. Now, the potentials of our two countries, I mean the USSR and Germany, for cooperation in many fields are great indeed. And the Treaty on Good Neighborliness and Partnership, which will soon be signed, will promote this, I'm sure. On the day of unification, Mr. Gorbachev wished the great German nation happiness, prosperity, eternal peace in the family of European nations. I think that sums it up very nicely.
Now, Marianne Kehoe of Atlanta, Georgia. When I visited Moscow, she writes, I was issued a hotel pass for the hotel where I stayed. I'm still not sure why a pass was needed. If our Atlanta hotels adopted such a system, they'd quickly go out of business.
Hi, Marianne. I get all your letters, but I don't answer all of them, so do excuse me. You know, nobody seems to know what these passes are for. I once visited the huge Cosmos Hotel, and I needed a pass. But in the hard currency bar, where I and my host went for a cup of coffee, you see, we were doing an open line show to the United States, straight from the hotel. In that bar, there were no end of, well, what should I call them, ladies of the night. Three accosted us in about 20 or 25 minutes. One sat down next to me and said, "Hello!" And my host says, "Look, get lost." Now, may I ask you, how did they get in? Or are these girls on the hotel staff?
Kurt Cox of Leeburg, Oregon, who is a teacher, writes, I find that my students will tune elsewhere when your program New Market is on. Is the New Market program of very much benefit to Soviet capital attainment?
Well, I fully agree with you that it is not of much interest to the average listener. It's a sort of commercial directed at the business world. However, it does make for business contacts, which we so badly need.
Charles Weaver of Ocean Grove, New Jersey. Last year, I had a triple bypass. In this country, many of these heart operations are done. Are there many done in your country?
I'll have to admit that we do lag behind in operations of this kind on the heart. We lag behind in kidney transplants, too. We perform fewer operations of that kind than are done in the United States. But I suppose with time, things will improve.
Time now for your wrap-up joke, Joe.
Okay. To join the Communist Party, they say, you need three recommendations of party members. Today, to leave the party, you need three recommendations from those who are not members.
That was Joe Adamoff answering your questions on Moscow Mailbag. Address your letters to Radio Moscow, Moscow, the USSR. And you couldn't do better than write us that letter. Your comments on this show are welcome.
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
We now return to our recording already in progress.
The following is a rather long public service announcement. The gist of which is to get up on your feet and start moving. Welcome to Brain Damage. And the preceding public service announcement was brought to you here on Brain Damage, WUSB in Stony Brook. Special thanks to Viral Mark for passing that on to us. Charlie's Dance Mix. Thanks a lot, Charlie. Featuring Errol Inks. And we heard a whole bunch of things there. Whole bunch of things. Glory, glory, hallelujah. When the saints come marching in, jump and break away. No, no, we ain't going home. Hang on, Sloopy? That's what it says here. Hang on, Sloopy. I don't know. All kinds of incredible things. About 25 people in the band there playing away forever and ever. And, yeah, it's a public service announcement. It's the kind of thing we need to hear, you know, because when people get all depressed and all thoughtful about the future and what's the point of it all, anytime somebody asks you, what is the reason to continue? What's the reason to wake up in the morning or afternoon or whatever and just go on to the next day? And what I'd like to do is every time somebody asks that, just say, you know, and if they don't get the point, I don't know, is there maybe something else we can do, maybe try the other side or something, but it's what we need, you know. We need to hear things like this. We need to hear life and spirits and just a sense of exuberance, because it's been lacking, you know. It's been lacking in a lot of us as individuals. It's been lacking in us as a community. I feel sort of a paralysis surrounding just about everybody I know. You know, it's kind of, you know, we hear things in the news. We hear prophecies of doom and all kinds of other things. I mean, did you see the paper this week? I think it was on Tuesday or Wednesday, something like that. Front page story. It said U.S. officials say that if the United States were to invade Kuwait, it could very well launch a chemical weapons attack on Israel by Iraq, an attack which would wipe out 98% of the population. 98% of the population. And would provoke, presumably from the remaining 2%, a nuclear strike on Baghdad or the suburbs of Baghdad or what have you. And make a whole big mess of an area which is already a whole big mess, and which, you know, if you ask me, I say we just abandon the whole damn thing. Just let it rot. What a lot of trouble, you know? I mean, we've got deserts too. We can save a lot of time and trouble just by staging our own battles in our own deserts. You know, I traveled through the desert this summer. It was neat, you know? Very attractive, very different. But I don't know if it's worth dying for. I don't know about that. Let's take a look at what's going on in the world, and then perhaps we can bring it a bit closer to home. Yeah. First of all, the most important story, which I don't even have to tell you what it is, it's the weather, of course. 7 degrees Celsius, 45 on the Fahrenheit scale at 10:38 on a Saturday night. The Saturday between Election Day and Veterans Day. And it's such good news to know that we may have a whole lot more veterans to celebrate Veterans Day in the future. You know how everybody was worried about that holiday? Ever see the WKRP episode where Les Nessman goes up in the airplane with the disgruntled veteran who says nobody celebrates Veterans Day anymore, nobody pays attention to the veterans? Well, we send 500,000 people overseas to get slaughtered, and I heard that we could lose 30,000 of them in the remaining moments. I'm sorry, the opening moments of the war. Opening moments. You know how many we lost in Vietnam? About 55,000 total. We've come a long way in 20, 25 years. We can kill people so much quicker. So much more effectively. So much more uncompromisingly. Anyway, I'm sorry to take away from the weather. Currently, as I said, we have 7 and 45 Fahrenheit. We're expecting gradual clearing. It'll be windy, turning colder, low in the low 40s. For Sunday, which is tomorrow, a mix of sun and clouds, quite breezy and chilly, high in the mid to upper 40s. Sunday night, becoming mostly cloudy with a 40% chance of... What do you think? Anybody want to guess? Anybody want to guess? 40% chance of... Wrong. No, it's not rain. No, it's not rain. Anybody else want to guess? That's obscene. No. This is the weather we're talking about here. 40% chance of snow showers. Snow showers! Which is sort of the weatherman's way of saying he doesn't know what's going to come out of the sky. It's going to be something wet. It'll be breezy and cold with the low in the low to mid 30s. My kind of weather, folks. And Monday becoming mostly sunny, but still breezy and chilly, high only in the mid-40s. That is the weather. I'm not ripping up the weather. I'm ripping it out so we can have it here to cherish and share with the rest of the staff. And that's all the garbage news that we don't need. What else is going on? Well, Pablo Picasso, remember him? He never visited the United States. Do you know that? Never once visited the United States. Incredible. Can you imagine that? Not visiting the United States once in your life. Of course you can't imagine that because you all probably live in the United States. But if you didn't live in the United States, you'd have that option. And he exercised it. However, it didn't make a bit of difference because the U.S. government maintained extensive files on him anyway. Why? Because they considered him a subversive. That's according to an article in the New York Times. Both the FBI and the State Department kept secret dossiers. I love that word. On Picasso, who was born in Spain and lived most of his life in France. The FBI still maintains Picasso file, although I doubt they're going to be getting much new information. He died 17 years ago at the age of 91. The documents show that U.S. officials worried about the effect Picasso, who joined the French Communist Party in 1944. I didn't know that. Ooh. The effect Picasso might have on public opinion here. The article was written by Herbert Mittgang, author of Dangerous Dossiers, a 1989 book about the FBI's practice of maintaining files on writers, including Nobel laureates Thomas Mann, Sinclair Lewis, Ernest Hemingway, William Faulkner, John Steinbeck, and Pearl Buck. Boy. Don't have to take classes here at Stony Brook. We can just go check out the FBI files. Anyway, Mittgang obtained the Picasso files 2.5 years after requesting them under the Freedom of Information Act. That's about how long it takes, too. The files showed that federal agencies kept track of Picasso for about 25 years, monitoring what he wrote, said, and signed. Including when the UPS man came, I guess. The FBI labeled Picasso as a security matter C. Security matter C. The C stood for communist, and also a possible subversive. What first drew the attention of FBI Director Herbert Hoover was a statement written by the artist in 1944 called Why I Became a Communist, in which Picasso said, "My joining the Communist Party is a logical step in my life, my work, and gives them meaning. And death to the Yankee imperialist swine." Okay, I just tacked that on, but he might as well have said that, right? Let's face it. Join the Communist Party, you're signing your own doom. Of course, if you join the Communist Party anywhere in the world these days, you're signing your own doom, but... He didn't know that back then in 1944. Well, it's time for another public service announcement. And we've got some other exciting things. We're also going to be taking phone calls at 632-6901. That's 632-6901. Call now and hang out on the line for a while, let the phone ring. Reserve your place in the pecking order.
According to Save a Tree, one 15 to 20-year-old tree produces only 700 grocery bags. Billions of paper bags are used every year. Plastic bags are more convenient, but another environmental hazard. They often end up in the ocean, creating a booby trap for marine animals that swallow or become entangled in them. Even biodegradable plastic never goes away completely. It simply breaks up into smaller pieces. As a wise consumer, your best choice is conservation. Think twice before taking any bag for small purchases. If we each used one less bag per month, we could save hundreds of millions of bags every year and hundreds of trees. Operation Earth, you can make a difference.
Damn right you can make a difference. Thank you, whoever you are. Thank you for saying that. And that's sort of the theme of what I'm trying to say here tonight. Because I've been on this depression kick for the last, last how many days. I've been talking to a lot of people, you know? And a lot of people are getting depressed. Have you noticed that? A lot of people are saying, you know, everything's miserable. Of course, everyone's getting sick, too. That doesn't always help. That makes it kind of depressing when you're lying around and not able to do anything except watch TV. I mean, that's enough to do it to you right there. But you take a good look at your life, look at what you've accomplished, where you've gone, where you've been. And lots of times, the answers just aren't satisfactory enough. But the one thing that I found tends to make a difference is when you tell somebody that they make a difference, you know, that they can change something. They can change you, they can change other people, they can change themselves. The world would be a different place without them around. And I think that's what we all need to hear, both as a collective group and as individual people. And we need to hear it quite a bit, too, you know. We shouldn't shy away from saying this. You know, I mean, saw my mailman today. And I just told him, you know, straight out of my heart, I said, mailman, I didn't know his name, wish I did. If it wasn't for you, so many people I would never hear from. So many bills I'd never pay, I'd probably be better off for that, but still, it's not your fault. It's something you have to do and something I appreciate. And I've learned a lot about the economy and about how to balance checkbooks and things like that, all because of the mail. The mail which you bring every day, except Sunday and Monday, this coming Monday. And that day when you disappeared, nobody knew where you were, but we won't talk about that. I just wanted to make it clear that I was happy he was around, you know? And this coming week, I'm going to make a point of getting up at about 6 in the morning to finally meet my garbage man. You know, I've never done that. I've never met the garbage man. A strange, mysterious entity that comes around. But man, think where you'd be without him. Or her. Or them. Or whatever. You gotta appreciate people. And I really mean this. You gotta appreciate everybody around you. And show them that their presence here does count for something. And not just because of the mundane, trivial tasks they may be performing, which may or may not be mundane and trivial, but just the things they say, you know, the unique comments they have on life as it passes us all by, because we're all fellow passengers in this great big Greyhound bus going somewhere. I'll tell you, I did a lot of thinking this week, you know, a lot of thinking about what's going on? What's going on in the world? What's going on locally? What's going on inside me? I mean, it's just incredible the things that are going on inside every person. You know? All that blood and tissue, and vital organs in various places. Found myself wondering if insects have vital organs. Of course, they must have vital organs. Can you imagine that? An ant having a liver? Or spleen? I don't know. I don't know where these thoughts come from, but you just sort of sit around and you wonder about these things. And if an ant has those things, then, you know, those little things that ants use as cows or whatever. Aphids or whatever you call them. They must have those same things. So you got an aphid liver, an ant heart, you know, and it's doing the same thing that our organs are doing, except it's doing it inside this little tiny creature that you can barely see. And I guess either you appreciate that or you don't. And if you don't, you've probably already turned on some sports network or something. But after a while, after thinking about this for a good long time, I got moved into action, you know, into doing something. Actually doing something for myself that I would not have done before. I went out and I got myself a new car stereo. Yeah. Remember a couple of months ago, my car got broken into and they took my radio along with the tape of this show. And I was so depressed, so angry, so upset, so disappointed that people would do that to somebody else without at least getting to know the person first. And just got all depressed about that. But then the insurance came in. And the insurance covered the radio, and actually, I found out at that point that I really got taken in by the person I bought the car from, because the radio was worth a whole lot less than what I had paid for it, and I was able to buy a much better radio for the money that I got, and I did. I went to a car stereo store, which is one of the weirdest places you ever want to go to. You ever go to a car stereo store? It's got all these people wandering around just thinking about car stereos, you know, nothing else. People who just want bass, you know. I need bass for my back seats. A bit more treble by the dashboard, if you please. What do I have to do to get the mid-range just right on the hump? I'm not kidding. I'm not kidding about this at all. People are very strange in car stereo stores, and they all speak the same language. I just went in, and I wanted a radio and a tape deck and all that kind of thing, but I wanted one that I could take with me, one that I would not have to worry about somebody else taking, because I would have it with me at all times. And there it is, right? It's on the floor, right next to me now. I have it with me. I take it with me everywhere I go. And no one's going to touch that radio. It's mine, and it sounds so incredibly good, you know? When you're driving around, and you've got loud music, you know? And you got bass and funky vibrating tunes. Yeah, sort of like that. You know, it changes the way you drive, because when you drive in silence, without anything around, you get lost in your thoughts, which is good to a degree, but if you get lost in your thoughts too much, you lose sight of the rest of the world, and it's not a good thing to do. But you pump up the volume, you hear all these amazing things as you pass by all these amazing sights. Changes your perspective completely. Makes you into a happy person when you got a good car stereo, you know? I don't know how to describe it. You just gotta do it. You just gotta be out there and have sound hitting you from all different angles. Yeah. That's how I made my week good. I suggest other people do the same. Of course, I had somebody come over to install it. You know, you get that. You get a person that comes to your house to install the stereo once you get it. And this person came to my house and installed the stereo in the car, but made a few comments that I thought were really interesting. He said, you know, this stereo would be great, except you got the wrong car for it. The car stinks, you know, the car is bad. What you want this kind of a car, because that really accentuates the sound, you know. You have a couple more cubic feet in the front, and that emphasizes the speakers in the front more. You don't lose it all in the dashboard, which is bad. And in the back, you would have more space for a bigger woofer, for instance, and you'd be able to get more bass back there, because everybody wants bass in the back. They don't want bass in the front. Nobody wants bass in the front. Come on already. So this guy is telling me what kind of car to buy for my car stereo. The world is a crazy place. But the crazier it gets, the more I like it. Crazy, yes. How about this? This week, and this should interest everybody on campus. Story from Newsday. two Staten Island teenagers arrested, charged with using the telephone. No, it's not the beeper. Oh, boy. Whew. Well, that's bad news, all right. But he's just going to have to wait. Hopefully he can get somebody else to help him. Okay. No me getting into my secret life here. Yes, using the telephone. We all know what the telephone is. Don't we? Thank you. Thank you for that cue there. Yes, that's the telephone. Using that particular object to cause $2.4 million worth of damage to the voicemail system of a Massachusetts-based publisher of computer and games magazines. $2.4 million. Now, the teenagers who told police they were miffed because they did not get the free poster promised with a subscription to Games Pro magazine, tapped into the employee's voicemail system and changed recorded greetings into obscene messages, among other actions, according to Don Delaney, a senior investigator for the state police. The company's voicemail system enables callers to leave recorded messages, as do most voicemail systems. Delaney said that Daniel Rosenbaum, 17, of Staten Island, and a 14-year-old accomplice, whose name was withheld because of his age, but is rumored to be his brother, so you can probably guess his last name, they were charged on Monday with computer tampering, unauthorized use of a computer, and aggravated harassment. It should be noted, however, that they did not have a computer or a terminal. They simply used their telephone. Rosenbaum's mother refused to comment or give her first name yesterday. Olga Greenwood, corporate telecommunications analyst for International Data Group of Framingham, Massachusetts, said that the youths, using an 800 telephone number, were routed to the company's Greenboro, New Hampshire office, where they systematically broke into the voicemail boxes of 200 employees, including the president. Now, this is supposedly what happened. The president's name is Roger Murphy. His normal message was, "Hi, this is Roger. I'm not at my desk right now." They changed it to, "Hi, this is Roger. I'm under my secretary's desk right now. I'll be with you as soon as I can." The teenagers routinely wiped out voice messages from advertisers who were indicating the ads they wanted to buy, according to Greenwood. These kids erased all of them, full-page ads that run into the thousands of dollars. The customers later complained, and of course they took their business elsewhere. Greenwood and Delaney said the youths also changed users' passwords and blocked employees from getting their own voicemail. They also learned how to use the system to send a pre-recorded bomb threat to each of the employees. Greenwood said she did not know why the boys didn't get the promised poster. I don't know if it was human error or computer error or what. What do you think of that, huh? What do you think of causing $2.4 million like that? Well, it just so happens, I found out that this particular company has the exact same kind of voicemail system that they have right here at Stony Brook. It's called Phone Mail. Now, with Phone Mail, you use certain features. In other words, you can call a number. I'll call our hotline, for instance, and you get a recording.
Hello, you've reached the WUSB hotline.
Yes, it's my voice.
If you want to leave a message,
you can leave messages. You can do all kinds of interesting things like that. But more importantly, you can also call up the system and enter the system itself by doing this.
Hello, this is the phone mail system. If you are calling from your own extension, push enter or pound. If not, you may either enter your extension or your name. To enter an extension, dial the extension and then push enter or pound. To enter your name, dial your last name followed by first name until recognized.
Okay, so you would enter your extension.
You dialed.
Okay, we're not going to tell you what we dialed because it has to remain secret. That's just the way it is. But
and then push enter or pound. If not, push stop or star.
Okay, she's just asked us to enter our password, so we'll do that.
To record, push 1. Change personal options, push 8. Transfer out of phone mail, push 7, then 0.
It would also give us an option of listening if we had messages. We don't have messages, but we can change personal options. This is what we can do.
To change your greetings, push 1. Answering mode, push 2. Password, push 3. Referral extension, push 4. Distribution lists, push 5.
Prompt level, push 6. To return to home state, push pound.
Now, I can go in there and I can change the greeting that you just heard earlier to say whatever I want to say, because I'm in the account right now. Now, I can also change the password.
Referral extension.
Okay. We have to hit a 3 to change the password. Now, I think this is very interesting. Listen very carefully
here. To return to home state, push pound. If you need help, push help or 0.
We're going to change the password, or try to change the password.
Passwords may be no longer than 24 digits. Dial your new password and push pound.
Okay, we're not going to change the password here because we don't want to do that. But we now know that passwords on this system can be 24 digits long. So how is it possible, if I can refer to the article here, for these teenage kids to systematically break into the voice mailboxes of 200 employees, including the president? Could it be that the company was not using real passwords, that they were all using the same password, that they were all using what's known as the default password? Here at Stony Brook, you get a 3-digit password, and everybody gets the same password when they first get an account. Very, very simple. And it's extremely easy to log into all kinds of accounts that way. Now, if this company did not even change their passwords, especially after the account started being broken into, how can you say that these people caused $2.4 million? It seems like the company was being kind of, dare I say it, inept. Yes, inept. I've said it. It's out. Inept. Incompetent. Idiots. Fools. Morons. Imbeciles. Halfwits. Dimwits. Simpletons. Sorry. Let's try something else, okay? Let's get on the blower here to 800 information and see if they actually do have a system like that. I'm told they do. Let's see if they're even listed. I hope they are. Information there. Sluggish as usual. Yes, hi. I need the telephone number, please, for Games Pro Magazine. That's Games, P as in Peter, R as in Richard, O as in Oswald.
No listing, I'm sorry.
No listing at all. Okay, thank you.
Welcome.
Are you still there?
Yes.
I just thought of something else that might be listed. It might be listed in the International Data Group of Framingham, Massachusetts.
No.
Thank God you didn't hang up.
The toll-free number is 800-343-4935. Repeat.
No, it's not necessary. Shut up. No, go away. Thank you. Okay, let's try that out and see if we in fact do get the same kind of system. We can get a human, who knows. Hopefully we won't. Hate getting humans.
Hello, you've reached International Data. The office is closed. The office is open.
All right, if you hit a 0, you get the phone mail lady on this system. Let's see
if
we get this. Whoops. Phone's ringing. Always wait 4 rings. Okay, let's try that one more time. We didn't let her finish what she was saying, so it's incredibly easy, you know. These are 14-year-olds, 17-year-olds, able to do this kind of thing. Think if you really wanted to cause damage.
Hello, you've reached International Data. The office is closed. The office is open from 9 a.m. to 5:30 p.m. If you know the extension or the name of the party you are calling, please press 1 now. Or if you don't know the name or the extension, press 2 and you can leave a message. Thank you.
Okay, we'll press 2.
Mailbox 5091.
At the tone, please indicate the name of the party you are calling, your name, your company name, and your phone number.
Okay, now we know mailbox 5091. They just told us mailbox 5091 for some reason. There was no reason to tell us that, but they did. So what happens now if we call them back and enter that as the number we're going to call? Where do we go from there? See, this is how it works. This is how people learn one thing after another. Before you know it, you have complete control over their system.
Hello, you've reached International Data. The office is closed.
We're going to hit a 1.
The office is open.
Please enter the number or the name of the person you wish to reach, followed by number sign. To enter a... That number is not in service. Please try again.
All right, what happens if you don't do anything?
Please enter the number or the name of the person you wish to reach, followed by number sign. To enter a name, press 1-1. Spell the last name and then spell the first name.
Okay, let's try Roger Murphy, the president we heard about. She did
start
say.
Entering the last name. For Q, press 7. For Z, press 9. To exit, press number sign.
M-U-R... P.
Calling. Last name, M-U-R-P-H-Y. First name, T-E-D.
No, wrong one. Wrong Murphy. Uh-oh. Maybe this is a different company. That's possible. This might be the wrong company, because this is International Data Group, not Games Pro Magazine. But as you can see, we can have endless hours of fun here, just sort of wandering around. Okay, we're going somewhere else now. We just got transferred. Probably get a recording. Or might be going to the main switchboard or something like that. Well, it's the weekend, you know, people aren't there. I guess this kind of thing has to be expected, but it's a small taste of what kind of things can go on. I don't know. Do you think we should say these kids caused $2.4 million in damage just by playing around like that? I don't know. I mean, phoning in bomb threats, that's stupid, and that should not be tolerated, but this kind of charge, we can put them away for about 50 years, and I don't think that's the answer either. Okay. Oh, my God. 7 minutes after 11 o'clock, and just been handed a note that... people are calling asking about the tripods. The tripods will be here very momentarily. I know this is the episode where Howard returned. Howard returned 2 weeks ago, and we weren't on last week. And so people are crowding around the radios wanting to know what has happened to Howard and the reunion with the family and all that kind of matter. All right. First, I have to get another public service announcement here. This one is going to be about disposable diapers, because there's been a... increased interest in that recently. We'll be back with the tripods, for more world happenings, and your phone calls at 632-6901. I should warn you, however, that I am not going to the phones unless I have a full switchboard. That means 5 calls. It's not much to ask, I don't think, considering we have 250,000 listeners out there somewhere. Most of them passed on to other realms. But never mind that. 632-6901, area code 516. Public service announcement, tripods, and then back to us.
Americans throw away 18 billion disposable diapers a year. Enough to stretch to the moon and back 7 times. About 1% of all U.S. landfill space is filled with disposable diapers. They can take up to 500 years to decompose, and they consume an incredible amount of resources. Over 1 million metric tons of wood pulp and 75,000 metric tons of plastic annually. Manufacturers recommend that disposable diapers be emptied before discarding them. Environmental Action estimates that 3 million tons of untreated feces and urine end up in landfills rather than in the sewage system every year. Switching from disposable to cloth diapers isn't easy, but it doesn't have to be one or the other. Try to use a diaper service at home and disposables when you're away. It's a healthy choice for the future of your baby's environment. Operation Earth. You can make a difference.
V
Radio Free Long Island, in coordination with the Three Village Tobacco Farms, proudly presents The Adventures of the Tripod Family, the story of one of America's most illustrious families and their struggle to find peace and happiness in the suburbs of Long Island. Well, last week as we left, our friends Howard had just appeared at the door after being away for a long time, and as we look in today, we hear...
What's wrong? Have you all been struck dumb? Oh, why are you looking at me like that?
It's just that we didn't expect to see you walk in so suddenly.
Yeah, especially since we were just leaving to take you out of the mental hospital.
It was a coincidence. That's what it was.
Sounds that way.
Oh, but we were so happy to see you again at last, Howard.
Yeah, you really had us worried there for a while.
We thought you were going crazy on us.
Well, I almost did, actually, but how did you find out about me getting amnesia?
The guy from the fruit and vegetable stand where you were working called us, what was his name?
It was Mr. Greenbaum, wasn't it?
Yes, that's it, Charlie. He said that you'd been looking all over the island for me, Howard. Oh, sweet of you.
Well, that was very nice of old Mr. Greenbaum. He really tried to help.
Howard, how did you get out of the hospital?
Oh, that place. Well, I just snuck out when nobody was looking. They wanted to keep me in there for the rest of my life.
Oh.
Yeah, you know, run all sorts of tests on me. They thought I was crazy.
But you were crazy, weren't you?
Mr. Tripod, you shouldn't say things like that to him.
Confound it, Charlie. Howard's my son, and I know how to talk to him. Now, Howard, you went bananas, didn't you?
Well, yes, in a manner of speaking, actually.
What exactly happened to you, Howard?
Well, it's kind of funny that Pop put it that way, because that's almost exactly what happened. You see, I was working in Mr. Greenbaum's fruit and vegetable stand in the middle of the street. I was categorizing all the different fruits, and at the same time looking in the crowds for you, Kathy, when I spotted this banana peel on the sidewalk. So I walked over to it to pick it up so nobody would get hurt on it. But I must have walked too far, because the next thing I know, I was sailing through the air. And when I landed, I couldn't remember who I was.
Ooh.
Yeah, that's when they took me over to this amalgamated hospital in Huntington.
Ooh.
That's quite a story, Howard.
Yes, and I'm so glad it all had such a happy ending, too.
Yeah, I guess it did. You don't still believe that I ran away with that French actress, do you, Kathy?
Oh, of course not, Howard. In fact, I read in the paper where she didn't even go down to Whitney Island in the first place to make that film with you.
How about that?
And even so, I would have still believed you. It was just...
Yeah?
I was just so upset by the mere thought of what Uncle Jonathan told me that that's why I ran away in the first place.
Oh, hi, Howard. I can't hear you, but I can see that you're back.
Howard, you should have seen Uncle Jonathan fall down all those three flights of stairs before. Oh, you would have loved it.
Yes, well, there are a few things that I'd like to say to Uncle Jonathan.
Yeah.
Now, first of all, you had no right to say those nasty things about me that made Kathy think I was fooling around.
Yeah.
You also had no right to follow us clear across the country from Big Bear City, where you made our lives miserable over there, too.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know what possessed me to actually listen to you when you offered me a role in that stupid film of yours. But I know I'll never take you up on one of your stale offers again as long as I live. Now I want you to leave us alone. Stay away from my family. Stay away from our neighborhood. Stay away from the East Coast. Yeah, go back to Big Bear City and swindle some more helpless people over there. And if I ever see you knocking at our door again, I don't care if you are Kathy's uncle, you're going to be in a lot of trouble.
Yeah, that's telling him, son.
Could you possibly write that down, Howard? You see, my ears aren't working very well for some reason. And I didn't hear a word you just said.
Oh, that's right, Howard. I forgot to tell you. Uncle Jonathan seems to be losing his hearing, so you'll have to write that down for him. Do you remember what you said?
Oh, no. I'll never remember all of that.
Sure you will. I'll help you. Let's go home and figure it out.
That's a good idea, Kathy. Let's go over there now. Charlie, I want to thank you for all the help that you've been...
Yeah, we'll see you later, Charlie.
Wait a minute, folks. Just wait a minute. You seem to be forgetting something. You don't have a house anymore.
And so Howard finally comes home, and the Tripod family is at last reunited. However, one disturbing fact remains, that Kathy has rented out their house to another family. You want to be with us next time when we'll hear Howard say... I mean, you think I should have remembered something like that. That's next time on The Tripod Family, a presentation of Radio Free Long Island and the Three Village Tobacco Farms. This is Don Topeka.
Recycling is one of the simplest ways each of us can contribute to a healthier environment. About 1 billion gallons of motor oil is used every year in this country. over one-third of it ends up in groundwater, rivers, and streams. Over 500,000 trees are needed to supply Americans with their weekly Sunday newspapers. Every year, approximately 28 billion glass bottles and jars are thrown away, enough to fill New York's World Trade Center every 2 weeks. Today's aluminum can tossed on the ground will still be on Earth 500 years from now. Many communities provide recycling centers for newspapers and non-returnable bottles and cans. And many service stations and stores recycle used motor oil. In fact, it's required in some states. Milk cartons, corrugated cardboard, and plastic can also be recycled. Operation Earth. You can make a difference.
Oh, I like that clock at the end. Yes. Yes, an aluminum can is here forever. If you drop it on the ground, remember that. It's sort of your legacy, I guess. Okay, we have two open lines, so two more people call in at 632-6901. Get the lines lit up, we can go to the phones. Fair enough, I guess. And what else is happening around here? Well, where do we begin? Oh, there's so much happening. 5,000 people on Long Island signed an anti-war petition. Petitions containing 5,000 signatures from Long Islanders have been sent to President George Bush and Iraqi President Saddam Hussein as part of an effort to urge a peaceful solution to the Persian Gulf crisis. The petitions, which were also presented to three local congressmen recently, were gathered at Roman Catholic churches across Long Island as part of a campaign by the Peace and Justice Commission of the Diocese of Rockville Center. 5,000 people. And they say this is not aimed at being negative toward the troops over there now. We're saying it's a defensive action, and I think there's support for that, but there is growing concern that with almost 300,000 troops and the continuing rhetoric about the war option, it leads many people to think we're going to have a military offensive in the Gulf. And still have two open lines, folks, and I've got plenty of stuff to read here, so get two more people to call in, and we'll go to the phones. Why? Why am I insisting on five people? Well, because weeks past, we've had some silly people on the phone, and we want to have the odds be with us. Let's just put it that way. The more, the merrier. Anyway, there was a great piece in the Times on Thursday called Why the Rush to War, written by the editor of The Progressive. And it's basically five questions George Bush should answer. And I think it's important that they be asked by us frequently, because we've all got a lot to lose here. How many of us know somebody that's over there now? You know, with almost 500,000 people by the end of the year who are going to be there, odds are somebody that we know is going to be over there, or certainly affected in some way. The continuing buildup of American forces in the Persian Gulf and the increasingly heated rhetoric emanating from the White House point to the likelihood that the U.S. will soon be waging all-out war against Iraq and Saddam Hussein. How often, after all, can President Bush denounce the Iraqi leader as Hitler? How often can he proclaim that he has had it with the treatment of American hostages and not follow through? We are told that the purpose of both the buildup and the bluster is to intimidate Mr. Hussein. It seems much more likely, however, that the actual purpose is to prepare Americans for a U.S. offensive. Members of Congress have come away from recent White House briefings convinced that the shooting will begin soon. Members of Congress convinced that the shooting will begin soon. Secretary of State James Baker has just hammered out an agreement with the Saudis about a command structure for the joint forces, and he's just come back, I believe, from France, England, the Soviet Union, kind of getting permission to launch a military offensive. And, you know, I always, this is me, by the way, not the article. I always say that whenever military things happen, they always happen between Election Day and when Congress comes back into session. Sort of like here at Stony Brook, where they always raise a tuition while everybody's away. Whew. Well, we're in that period now. Could happen. Could be happening right now. I haven't seen a teletype recently. Maybe somebody can check that for me. Anyway, back to the article. Is a war really necessary? What would the purpose be? Before our soldiers are marched off to combat, before our soldiers are marched off to combat that could exact extremely high casualties,
President Bush ought to give the American people precise and compelling answers to a number of crucial questions. Number one, what will we win in exchange for the sacrifice of thousands, perhaps scores of thousands, of American and Arab lives? Well, early in August, when the first American troops were dispatched to the Persian Gulf, we were told that their mission was to prevent an Iraqi attack on Saudi Arabia. Remember that? That was the reason we went there in the first place, prevent Iraq from invading Saudi Arabia. I mean, you can remember that, can't you? All of you? You don't have to be a particular age to know this. You don't have to know history. You just have to be around since last August. Anyway, that threat faded long ago. There hasn't been any talk of Iraq invading Saudi Arabia. The question now is how many casualties we are willing to take and inflict to restore Kuwaiti boundaries that were invented in the 1920s by the British Foreign Office. And you know, I saw something on TV the other day. They had comparisons between the average annual income in the area. And they're all pretty low, you know. Like Iraq is something like $900 a year, or maybe $1,100 a year. Kuwait, $24,000. You could kind of see why that would be annoying. Not justifying them invading the country, but that, coupled with something that was on the BBC last week, indicating that U.S. officials, it might have been Baker actually, were in Kuwait last year, plotting ways to kind of subvert the Iraqi economy. And supposedly there are documents that prove this that the U.S. government is not commenting on. And this has gotten absolutely no coverage in the United States, but it has gotten coverage in England and in other countries. Question number two, what do we expect to gain in return for throwing our economy and the rest of the world into a tailspin? Since the beginning of the U.S. military intervention, the Dow Jones Industrial Average has dropped by nearly 500 points, and the price of gasoline has increased by about 35%. But it isn't Saddam Hussein who has cut off sales of Iraqi oil. We've done that with our embargo. If it comes to war, today's oil prices will look like a bargain. If the Middle East oil fields are destroyed or severely damaged, the economic impact will be catastrophic. What will we be getting in return? Question number three. Is Saddam Hussein the world's only aggressor? Is he the only one the U.S. will be called upon to stop, or just the first in a long line? Actually, we could say he's the second, after all Manuel over there is languishing in prison, with his phone calls being aired all over the place. The answer to that, anyway, to be sure, Mr. Hussein was wrong to invade another country and depose its government, but remember that the United States has done the same from time to time, most recently in Panama and Grenada, and almost Nicaragua. Almost. Are we prepared to go to war against China for what it did in Tibet, against Turkey for its military rule in Cyprus, against Indonesia for its brutal occupation of East Timor? Timor? Sorry, I don't know how to say that. Is Iraq the only country that can't be trusted with nuclear, chemical, or biological weapons? What about Pakistan? What about India? What about Israel? What about South Africa? What about the five original hydrogen bomb powers? Are we prepared to stop them all? Question four. Do we want to be the world's all-purpose mercenary force? Are we going to scurry about extracting a few million or billion dollars from one ally or another, willing to let American troops do their fighting for them for a price? Have we come to the sorry point where we hire out our army like the Hessians defeated by George Washington? I should know how to pronounce that, I know, but I don't. Hessians, I'll say. Question five. Whatever happened to the U.S. Constitution? I saw a copy recently. Whatever happened to the U.S. Constitution? Article 1, Section 8, Paragraph 11 has not been repealed. It still confers on Congress, not the President, the power to declare war. For the last 40 years, we've been told that there is no time in the nuclear age for such niceties as a vote of Congress when the national security is threatened. But our soldiers have been sweltering in the Saudi desert for more than 2 months. Surely enough time for congressional action. Why not have Congress debate the issue and go on record with a vote? Those aren't all the questions I have, and I'm sure other Americans have many more. And that brings to mind a sixth question. If President Bush is about to take us into war, aren't we entitled to some answers first? We certainly are, and I think all of us are obligated to ask those questions and to put our names on petitions saying we're concerned at the very least. That article came from Erwin Knoll, editor of The Progressive, which is a monthly magazine. And still want to get another phone call in there, so one more person will do it. 632-6901, area code 516. We'll go to the phones if we get that caller to call in and say something about what we've been talking about here tonight. State of the world, state of the economy, state of our own personal lives, state of the weather. We'll get back to that later. The United States has about 330,000 troops over there. The Gulf Cooperation Council, that's Saudi Arabia, Oman, Qatar, United Arab Emirates, and Bahrain, they have 144,500. Egypt has 20,000, Syria 21,500, England 15,000, France 13,000, Pakistan 5,000, Bangladesh 2,000, Morocco 1,700. Didn't know that many people live there. Czechoslovakia 200. Yeah, let's hear it for Czechoslovakia. Argentina 100. 100 people. Altogether, more than 620,000. In Iraq, they have 555,000 in the army, 480,000 in the reserves. I don't know how they have so many people over there in the army ready to fight. That's incredible. A lot of people, folks. A lot of people getting ready for something. And I think we're a bit too old for this. A bit too old for such grandiose kind of things. We're asking for trouble. And trouble in the 1990s is something you better look out for. 632-6901. Good evening. Is anyone there? Wake up. I'm really sorry, but the person was online there for a good 20 minutes and apparently fell asleep. Good evening.
Evening.
How you doing?
All righty. And yourself?
I'm fine.
Ah, that's good. This is Murray again.
Murray again?
Murray the psychic.
The psychic?
Murray the psychic, yes.
All right. What do you predict for us?
Well, I would like to say something good, but unfortunately, my predictions are disastrous.
Disastrous in what way?
Economically, and I foresee some worldwide destruction if Bush continues on this mad, warmonging path that he's creating. I do believe those first 125,000 troops were there to protect Saudi Arabia from attack, defensive purposes only. But he's turned it around, and now he's on the offensive. And if we attack Kuwait, we'll be just as guilty as Saddam Hussein, I believe.
Well, I think if we attack Kuwait or invade Kuwait or whatever, the reaction is going to be a lot longer than the reaction when Saddam did the same thing. And it's going to be bloodshed like we haven't seen in a good long time. And, you know, I keep asking myself, what is it that we're protecting? You know, it wasn't democracy. They did not have democracy over there. They had oil fields.
Yeah, there's
and
no democracy being held over somebody's head here. I mean, it's oil. And
it's oil. I don't know if the people over there realize that's why they're there. And it's not, you know, I don't know, we've already paid a good deal more for gasoline, but it's not because of what Saddam has done, it's because of what we have done as far as blockading the Gulf and everything like that. Saddam wants to sell it for the same amount, I understand.
Yeah.
So it's not even a question of, well, if we just say, okay, you can have Kuwait, are we going to pay more? You know, maybe we will, I don't know, but, you know, to be honest, I think paying $2 a gallon is worth it if you know, a couple hundred thousand people don't get killed, and perhaps we can work out some kind of diplomatic solution, which, you know, I'll give credit to the powers up to now. They have been trying diplomatically, and I think they should continue to try diplomatically.
Unfortunately, with Baker making his rounds, I do believe an attack on Province 19 is imminent.
That's ominous, isn't it? You know, the way he's making rounds from country to country,
sort of asking permission. Well, you know, if we nuke Baghdad, you won't be too upset, will you? You know, we'll give you some grain in exchange. I don't know. Yeah, it doesn't portend very good things for the future. Not at all. Do you think there's going to be any side effects to all this?
Oh, of course, of course. I mean, as soon as body bags start coming home, people are going to wake up. I mean, people already have, you know, like you stated before, 5,000 signatures. And I'm sure there are many people out there who didn't sign it, who are willing to sign it, you know?
Yeah, I didn't know about it myself.
Me neither. I would have been willing to sign it myself if I had come across it.
But you know what's interesting? 5,000 people wouldn't have signed that in the opening days. The opening days, it did seem as if, you know, we should do something to prevent this. Now people are starting to have doubts, and people didn't start having these kind of doubts in Vietnam until well into it. It's a good sign when people are waking up like that. So I sure hope that, you know, the people in charge look at that and say, you know, we better not do anything stupid here. Do you think they will?
Well, it's interesting. Let me say this. About a week after August 2nd, CNN had a, I was watching CNN. Viewers call in, and I think like 14 out of 15 of those were in support of American action, and I think those numbers would drop drastically now if they had a call in.
What was the figure again?
I think 14 out of 15 calls were supporting American action.
And when was this?
This is like a week into, 2 weeks into the invasion.
Yeah, well, that's I'm sure that has changed now because. You know, what are we going to gain? It's not going to be something quick. It's not going to be, you know, like a Panama kind of situation here. And even Panama wasn't without bloodshed. Quite a bit of it, actually, on the opposition side. 46 people so far have died in the Gulf, and nothing has even happened yet. I heard this on the radio today. One soldier died of natural causes. I'm not quite sure what that means. And one soldier committed suicide. 46 altogether. And, you know, a shot technically has not been fired yet.
That's terrible. That's terrible. I think that was a Marine I heard today was killed by a stray bullet from one of his platoons.
Yeah,
they were practicing or something like that. But
these kind of things may be happening anyway, even if they weren't over there. But, you know, it's still something sobering to think of somebody so far away from everything that they know. You know, and it's such a hostile, at least hostile to us, environment.
All righty, I'll let you go and take some other calls. I do thank you.
Okay, thanks for calling.
All right, bye-bye.
632-6901. Let's hope we get some more thoughtful callers. Good evening.
Yes. Right now, I have a bet to settle with a couple of friends of mine that are listening tonight.
A bet?
Yeah.
Okay.
The bet is, all right, I asked so far 20 of my closest friends.
20 of your closest friends? Man, you must be a popular guy.
And the bet is...
20 of your... Okay, go ahead.
All right, if you have a chance and the opportunity... Would you shove a grenade up Saddam Hussein's ass?
Okay. I get the point here. I don't know what the point is, but, oh, boy. Saddam Hussein is no friend of mine. Let me just make that clear right now. And whatever pictures you might happen to see, they've been doctored. Never even met the man. Doesn't return my phone calls anyway. 632-6901. Good evening.
Hello?
How you doing? Sammy, is that you?
That's me, man.
Sammy, I haven't heard you in a dog's age.
I've been living upstate.
Well, the dog's been sick, too, so that doesn't really count for much.
Okay. Well, I haven't been listening. I just tuned it in, and I just called it up because I remember the number. I forgot the number.
Well, Sammy, you can call the number from upstate, too, you know.
I know,
but not only that,
I can't listen to the radio.
No, yes, you can, Sammy, because you can call on another phone. You can call 689-1662. That is our... on-air line. You can always hear whatever is on WUSB by calling 516-689-1662.
But Eric,
simple
as
that.
Phone, how am I going to listen and call in at the same time?
Well, you get two phones, okay? You get an extension put in.
I'm no Rockefeller. I live upstate, but I live in Albany. I'm no Rockefeller.
Well, maybe what you could do is get a friend or a neighbor of yours to dial it on their phone and then attach a kind of a coupler to it with an amplifier, stick it out the window, and blast it so that the whole neighborhood can hear, and then you can hear, and then you can call up at the same time.
No, I think you're getting crazier, because that's kind of long technical stuff. I can't do that.
Yeah, sure you can. Anyone can. A child could do it.
But the reason I called you is I'm on Long Island.
Well, that's good. Then you can hear, and there's no excuse for not listening.
Oh, no problem. And I'm calling because I'll probably be back for, like, Thanksgiving, and I want to call you.
Okay.
I want to say hello. You know, I haven't listened to the show in so long, and I don't know what's going on.
What's going on here, you know, it's, nothing's happening at Stony Brook, of course. The band is here tonight, actually. You know that?
Who?
The band.
You mean the band?
That's the name of it, the band. It's awfully hard to explain to people. Yeah, the band from the 1970s, 1960s, they're here tonight. They're playing, even as I speak, maybe they're finished now.
Which band?
No, the band. You know, Bob Dylan and the band.
In Yes?
No, not Yes.
No?
Oh, boy, I got into this conversation with someone before, and it went on for about an hour, and I don't want to do it again.
Is it Guess Who?
No, don't guess who. It's not the Who. It's not Yes. It's not No. It's not anybody. It's just it's the band. The band is here, okay? Or the band are here. I don't know.
I got a friend of mine. He knows all about that.
The band's all here.
Yeah, isn't that the band used to play with Dylan?
Yeah, you got it. Why didn't I think of that? Yeah, that's who it is.
Yeah, I know Tommy Dylan myself.
Uh-huh.
But you got a cold?
Yeah, I've had an awful cold. I've been sick, man. I have been sick, coughing and wheezing and.
I've been upstate where it's really cold.
Is it really cold? Have you gotten any? We're getting snow showers tomorrow.
It's colder than here.
We're getting snow showers. Did you hear the news?
I don't know. I won't go back.
Well, okay. Well, you know, you're a free man. You can do whatever you want.
Yeah.
Well, why the pregnant pause?
Well, you know, you're a free man. That's a big term. That's a lot of saying there. You're saying a lot of things that you're not too sure of that.
Yeah, it's a big term, but I know you're a big man. You can handle it.
Freedom is another word for nothing left to lose. Maybe I am free because I got nothing left to lose, but man.
Man, oh man. Yeah, I know exactly what you're saying. And
so I'm in a phone booth, and it's cold here.
Phone booths are not heated. They never have been, and that's something I've always wondered about.
Is Jim the doomsayer calling on the phone?
You know, I said it before, but Jim does not call as much anymore because everybody's gotten as depressed as he is. And so his existence has become like a moot point, you know?
How's that little kid call up?
Little kid is now a big grown-up.
Who's that?
Andrew. He now talks like a man. Yeah, he's not a kid anymore.
Homer genes grow up in him.
It's frightening to see the changes that have occurred around here.
Well, you've been on a long time, Eric. I've been calling you for how many years now?
It's been a couple of years, at least.
2 years?
Two, three, I don't know.
Because I remember some friend of mine who's some kind of financial nut.
Yeah.
He was saying that when I first called you, he said, yeah, I got 2 more years for my capital gain, whatever the hell that is. And it's been 2 years because, he reinvested money or something.
Did he really? Well, I hope he invested in war bonds because they seem to be paying off.
Somebody told me just recently to buy gold because of the war in the Middle East.
Yeah, well, you see, there is no war yet. A couple of people have said that, you know. A couple of people have said, well, because of the war, you know, and damn it, the war has not started yet. Maybe there won't be a war. Don't go around saying, the war is happening. It's not happening yet, and maybe we can stop it, and maybe there'll be a solution.
It's this way. If I came over your house with 4 guys, or let's say 400,000 guys, I'm definitely going to be looking for something other than just to talk about it.
Can you imagine 400,000 people? I mean, you know, I've been to Shea Stadium, right, when it's full, you know, for a playoff game. That's about 50,000 people. So you'd have to do that 8 times, and all those people are there to fight and kill and maim and torture and all that kind of thing. Or maybe not maim and torture, but at least, you know.
That's the American way.
Cause a stir.
That's the American way.
8 Shea Stadium fulls of people. I mean, you should phrase it that way, then the full effect of it. And that's not even everything.
Shea Stadium. You'd be safer in Saudi America over there between the two armies and being a Shea Stadium with them beer drinkers.
Well, that's true, too, with all the aluminum cans that are left out.
Hit with a bottle in the head.
You got hit with a bottle in the head?
Bottle in the head. Only once.
Uh-huh. Well, once is enough. That's, well, Sammy, we're going to have to go to some more calls, but any closing thoughts on the Persian Gulf situation or your situation?
I think it's a big shame because I don't like to see anybody defending the big oil companies overseas, like Gulf, Western, and all them other people. I'll do without the oil. I don't need the oil. I'll take the mass transit, and I'll just drive around in the subway, but I don't need none of that crap in their oil, and they shouldn't send me all the people over there, and they should bring everybody back for Christmas, but I know that's a far cry from what's going to happen.
All right. Well said, Sammy, and hopefully we'll hear words of wisdom from you in the future real soon.
Okay, man.
Thanks for calling.
Good night.
We have open lines. We've got a couple of lines full, but we got some open lines, and I can't believe that there is no interest in this kind of subject. Folks, you know, a lot of you out there are in the 18 to 34 a year range, you know, because we look at the Arbitron ratings and all that kind of thing, and we see exactly who you are and what you do and what your habits are, what your secrets are, what you buy, what you wish for, what you secretly wish for, and all the things that you've done in the past. We know that. We know all of that. But that's not important. What's important is that we know you're of age, and the age of being drafted is upon you. Now, have you registered for selective service? Have you? Yeah, it's not the same thing as a draft, right? Of course not. Selective service is, you know, something else. But now that they have all the names of the people, and they do have the names of all the people, you know how I know that? When you don't register, they send you a letter saying, why didn't you register? And if they know that you didn't register, what do they need you for to register? Because all you're telling them is your name and address. And also, if they already know this information, I can't figure it out. So they have all this information on everybody. All they have to do is say, hey, let's start the draft again. Might take a couple of weeks, might take a couple of months, but they can do it. They have done it before. And you guys out there, my listeners, could be among the first. So if you haven't really thought of it in that way before, start thinking of it in that way now, before it's too late. There may not be much time left. And the military-industrial complex, as old Dwight said, is a fearsome beast. 632-6901. Are you on hold for me?
Yes, I am.
Sorry, I don't know how you got on hold. You're not supposed to be on hold. That's a policy here at the radio station, which someone apparently has violated, but I apologize again. What is on your mind?
I just like to say, this is Andrew.
Andrew Goldberger with your new voice. How are you doing?
Hi. I just like to say that about the Saudi Arabia thing.
Yeah.
The oil prices here. Say it's like a dollar. What is it now? The going rate.
It's about $1.48 or something for the lowest. You know, but I'll say one thing that's interesting. I happened to accidentally take a picture of a gas station about 4 years ago.
Right.
And I noticed that the prices then were something like 71 cents per gallon. Now, before this whole crisis started, the prices were about $1.15. Now, what caused them to go up 40 cents in those years? And I didn't even notice that they went up 40 cents, but they did. What caused that to happen? There wasn't any real crisis. I can't figure that one out.
Well, see, people are making a big thing out of the oil prices, but through my trip to France this past summer, the gas prices are $5 a gallon or whatever, but it's so much more expensive there.
Hey, go to Canada, man. Go to Canada, and you'll see prices are double. Just a few miles away.
I know. So why are people making such a big thing? I mean, around the world you can find gas prices, I mean, triple, quadruple, whatever. But on the lighter side, Iraq is giving their people like 50 cents a gallon and everything just to...
I thought they were rationing gas.
I didn't hear about that, but...
I heard they started rationing gas and then they stopped. So I'm not quite sure what's going on over there, but I don't know about the price. That sounds kind of weird that they'd be offering it for that low.
And I really think that George Bush is acting like, I mean, such a loser. I mean, you see pictures of him on CNN swimming, playing golf, you know, and he's like, he has this crisis thing, and he's not taking it seriously. But, and he's saying all these comments, and every day in the news you hear George Bush has been making stronger comments today. It doesn't mean anything. You got to back it up somehow.
Yeah, well, that's what we're all afraid of, that he's going to start backing it up. Would that be right if he started doing that?
But the words are just nothing. It really doesn't mean anything. I mean, he's, on one hand, he's saying that he's trying to make peace with Iraq and, you know, peace treaties and everything like that. And you know, ending it peacefully, and then on the other hand, he's saying that he's making peace with Hitler, you know, some worse than Hitler. He actually said because of the hostages.
Now, I would consider, if I had relatives that were affected by World War II and the Holocaust, I'd take offense at that. You know, saying that
Saddam Hussein is worse than Hitler. I mean, Hitler was pretty damn bad.
Three quarters of my family, you know, were wiped out of from Hitler. But it's pretty hard to say that Saddam Hussein. If you think about it this way, in New York City, so many people, so many New Yorkers are killing other New Yorkers every single day.
Yeah, like
Iraqis have not killed one American yet.
I think they've been very careful not to. Speaking of that, no doubt know about the murder of Meir Kahane on Monday, I believe it was. You think that's going to affect the situation at all?
I really can't say. I heard about this guy, and I think that what's going to happen is Israel is going to become more violent. You know, they've had the violent attitude, really, you know, telling the U.S. several times to just go in there and blow up Iraq and, you know, several times. But
I don't know what has come over Israel. They've turned into a fanatic regime.
I cannot believe what they did to the guys that were just throwing stones. I mean, protests have been done all the time. I mean, but then again, you have to think about it. Why would you be throwing stones at guys that had machine guns?
Uh-huh. Well, I'd also like to know how many people have been killed by the stones. You know, I don't think anybody has been killed by stones. I mean, yeah, stones are not good to be hit with. I've been hit by stones when I was a kid. I'm sure everybody's been hit by a stone at least once in their lives. But it's hard to, you know, to justify machine guns in return. And especially when you ask yourself, well, why are they throwing stones in the first place? You know, maybe something isn't fair. Maybe that's why it's all beginning.
I have a plan, though.
Okay.
Send in the countries with the less amount of people. Like, send in the 100 from Argentina or the 200 from Yugoslavia just to see what happens.
Czechoslovakia.
Czechoslovakia, just to, you know, see what happens, because they should be contributing more. It's
uh-huh.
everyone's war, not just theirs.
Well, it's everyone's war or it's everyone's non-war, depending on how we decide. I mean, I don't think we should be the ones making all the decisions. I think the whole world should be making this decision. Andrew, thanks for calling. I want to get some more of these calls.
Hey, here's my message to Argentina.
Oh, no. I know what it's going to be. Okay, that's Andrew's toilet flushing once again. We've heard that so many times. On that subject, the Palestine Liberation Organization yesterday showed the Security Council of the UN a dramatic videotape of last month's Temple Mount violence, during which 20 Palestinians were killed by Israeli gunfire. The grainy film showed Palestinians fleeing Israeli bullets on the eastern side of the plateau. The 15-minute tape was punctuated by gunfire, smoke, and screams. PLO representative Nasser al-Kidwa told the council that the tape shows premeditated Israeli determination to cause the largest possible number of dead and wounded among Palestinian civilians. The PLO showed the tape to support its call for the Security Council to deploy UN military observers to protect Palestinians in the Israeli-occupied territories and in East Jerusalem. Israel has rejected the demand, saying the presence of a UN observer group in the occupied lands would violate its sovereignty and might just bring peace to the region, which goes against everything they stand for, I guess. I don't know. U.S. Ambassador Thomas R. Pickering and the Israeli envoy had no comment, but I think we should lock them both in a room until they say something. Okay. Mike, the building manager, what are you doing with my radio?
It's nice. It has buttons that go in and out.
I'm sorry, the microphone wasn't on. Say again.
Oh, I said it's nice.
Would you get that your other radio stolen from?
Yeah, no, I stole this. No, I got this from someone else. I mean, I got this from another place.
You can just pull it out really easy.
Why doesn't your microphone work? Speak into your microphone.
1, 2, hello.
It's not working. Hold on, let me open up this thing here.
Wow.
Also, you don't have headphones either. I'm sorry about that. You can't hear anything on the phone. You can't speak.
I can't hear you, and no one can hear me.
Nobody can hear you. I don't know why that is. Microphone seems to be plugged in.
The brown wire.
Nothing yet, huh?
I don't know, I can't hear my...
Well, Mike, I'm afraid we're just going to have to censor you tonight because...
Oh, you got a frayed wire right here.
It's a frayed wire?
Well, I don't know.
Afraid of what?
Yeah. Wires have no reason to be afraid, only people do. Well, Mike, there's people waiting to be on the air here, and unless you can figure out a way... You know what you can do? You can go into one of those other rooms there and just babble into a microphone, and I'll pick you up that way. Go into that little studio there.
It's getting complicated.
It's, kind of like a sauna, but it's nice. Yeah, we believe in cranking up the temperature to the max here. Okay, I guess I should have also told him to switch his. Well, I'm sure he knows what to do. He's the building manager. He's kind of confident. But yeah, you throw the red switch on and then you bring it up. Like yeah, but you got to turn the red switch on, which is all the way to the left over there. Oh, never mind. Just if you figure it out, we'll hear you say something. Good evening. Are you there? Anyone there? Okay, folks, here's how this works. You got to start talking when I say something, okay? You can't just sit there and stare at the phone. We can't see that. All right, 632-6901, good evening.
I got something to say to Saddam Hussein.
Oh, I don't think we want to hear that. Good evening.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead.
Hello, Eric.
Yeah.
Yes, I wanted to ask you a question. If Israel is such a strong ally,
yeah,
why aren't they sending troops there?
Well, that's an interesting question. Well, I don't know. You know, I think if they sent troops there, they would want to do something really quickly. And, that's something I never even thought of. I would not want there to be Israeli troops on the border of Iraq. That just might be too provocative. You know what I mean?
Well, I think it's just an example, again, of they want us to do the work for them.
No, you know, I think we've been saying to Israel, you know, keep quiet on this because, you know, we know you have a lot to say, but anything you say could probably just make matters worse. I think it's us that wants Israel to stay out of it because I don't know if you heard what I read from the paper earlier, but U.S. officials say that if we invade Iraq, Iraq would launch chemical weapons against Israel, wipe out 98% of the population. Israel would launch a nuclear strike against...
Nuclear war at that point.
Nuclear war. It's all over, you know? So we're staring down the barrel of a gun here. And I don't think...
I think it's an example of how Israel would like to use the U.S. to launch an attack against Iraq and take advantage of the situation. Just sit back and...
Well, Israel is rather fanatical recently, so anything is possible. Who knows who they'd like to invade? Hopefully, you know, I mean, if a war starts, there's no telling what's going to happen. I mean, people are going to be invading left and right. There's going to be all kinds of horrible things happening. Right now, you know, my interest is just to keep things peaceful, and I hope that's what they're doing at the top.
Yeah. Do you think that the assassination of Gehane will have any effect on the situation?
Yeah, it's already had an effect. I mean, in Israel, that is. You know, there's been more violence, but, you know, if there's a full moon, there's more violence over there. That's, you know, he preached violence. I can't say I miss him at all.
He deserved. He asked for it. I mean,
I wouldn't say
violence. He lived by the sword. He died by it.
Yeah, I can't say he should be surprised or anybody should be surprised. I wouldn't say he got what he deserved, but... you know, he did preach violence, yes, you're right about that, and he certainly got violence, and I don't see how anybody could have thought it would be another way. Of course, the person who did it should be, held accountable for that, but I think it's a lesson here, you know, violence begets violence. And, you know, maybe it's kind of a microcosm as to what we're leading ourselves into, because if we get violent, they're going to get violent in return, and it's just never going to end.
Yeah.
All right?
Okay.
Thanks for calling.
Okay, thank you. Bye.
All right, 632-6901. Good calls tonight. Hey, we're getting some neat people out there. If you're out there and you want to join them, give us a call. Good evening.
Hello, it's Mike the psychic again. I'm not going to type one.
Your second call of the night, Mike. Okay, you better have something really psychotic for us.
Yeah, I'd just like to say hi to Andy from his sparring partner in gym. That's
his
all.
Sparring partner in gym. What do you spar at?
Spar. We spar. He knows what I mean.
Well, I don't know what you mean. Neither do the 250,000 people listening.
It's sort of an inside thing.
Uh-huh. Okay. Well, I'm sure Andrew will call to protect his reputation, whatever it is you've just implied. 632... oh, boy. 632-6901. Let's build up those calls here. Look at this. A new atom plant being tested in South Carolina. I was in South Carolina. I saw a nuclear plant over there, but this is different. The first one built since 1960, the Energy Department has begun testing an $86 million plutonium processing center in South Carolina and is scheduled to begin operation in June of next year. Would be the first entirely new plant to produce nuclear weapons materials since 1960. Whew. Although Congress appropriated the money for the new plant, The Energy Department has been building it at the Savannah River Nuclear Weapons Plant for 7 years without public hearings or a formal review of the potential effect on the environment. Such steps are required by federal environmental law, say two national environmental groups, Greenpeace and the Natural Resources Defense Council. Hopefully, you know, the Constitution or the government says it as well, not just these groups. The Energy Department has pledged for several years to be completely open and honest about what they're doing and how they're doing it, says Stephen Schwartz, a lobbyist in Washington for Greenpeace. And here, by chance, we've uncovered a major new processing facility that is being built and about to go into operation without any ability on the part of the public to scrutinize it. Oh, boy. Plutonium. What do you think they're going to build there, folks? What do you think it's going to be all about? You know, Cold War is over. What war is about to begin? Oh, if we only had, Nepal's King Barendra. King Barendra of Nepal. He stripped himself of his absolute powers yesterday by proclaiming a new constitution that restores multi-party democracy to his Himalayan kingdom. From now onward, there shall never be a one-man rule in this country, said Prime Minister Krishna Prasad Bhattarai, as jubilant Nepalese daubed each other with colored powders in the streets of Kathmandu. Oh, yes, to be young in Nepalese. He promised elections by May. 10,000 people turned out to celebrate in the capital, where at least 50 people were shot to death in April to halt a march on the royal palace by pro-democracy demonstrators. Times, they are a-changing over there. What else is going on? Oh, that's about it, I guess. We're running out of time. 632-6901. Good evening.
Over to Clark.
Good evening. Anyone there? That's too bad. Good evening.
Yeah.
How you doing?
I'm calling about the caller that wanted to know why Israel wasn't helping us out in the Middle East.
Okay, go ahead.
Well, Israel is one of our most staunch allies, and I don't remember the last time they did help us out.
Uh-huh.
I don't think they're supposed to help us out. They just, like, we're their sugar daddy, and we just dole out the money and...
Well, are you agreeing with what that caller said?
Well, I'm agreeing that they don't do anything. They're not an ally. They're a burden. I think most of the problems they have in the Middle East, or most of the problems we have in the Middle East, is because of our support of Israel and their expansionist policies,
well,
probably.
Now, if Israel were not so, closed-minded about the Palestinian issue, if they were not expansionist, as you say, would you support their existence? Do you think their existence is important?
No.
Really?
They've proved that by putting people in concentration camps just like they were complaining about during the First World War.
Well, yeah, but that's, I don't think that's the Israeli people doing that. I think that's, certain aspects of the government that are reacting in rather strange ways to a difficult situation.
They are the government.
Well, they are, but I don't think they've taken that power. They should definitely take that power. But to say that, that the State of Israel shouldn't exist, that's going way too far, I think, Because it's very important that that we learn some lessons.
The Cherokee Nation didn't exist. We're going to just bring it back.
Yeah, it's not nearly the same thing. I mean, when the Cherokee Nation was wiped out, centuries ago, wasn't it?
Well, okay, then what do we do the next 1900 years about the Palestinians? Genocide's genocide.
I agree with that, and something has to be done about this Palestinian issue, and we should make that
Well, killed them all.
Well, that seems to be, that was what Kahane sort of was.
Have to go one side or the other. You're either going to let them live, and it seems like no one over there wants to live in peace. They all cry out for revenge and blood.
It does seem that way, doesn't it?
So you either let them live or kill them. Be done with it. Kill them.
Well, I can't quite condone that, but thanks for your input anyway, and we'll be back next week. Oh, yes, the problems of the world are strange and difficult. That sounds rather muddy, doesn't it? Let's put it somewhere else. Let's put it over here. I don't know what's wrong with the studio tonight, folks. It's falling apart. Hold on, let me just give it a good hit on the side. All right, that helped a little bit. Oh, yes. Well, the problems are particularly weird over there, where strange kind of a strange kind of evil sort of takes over in that particular part of the world. Perhaps it's Killer Bob, who knows? Next week we'll know more. Next week the situation will advance even further. And let's hope we have some good news to share. Until then, though, remember to talk to your fellow beings in this planet, because they're your only source of sanity. Thanks so much for calling. Raz is next, and I'll see you next week for Brain Damage. Eric Corley, good night.
You are a mountain stream, and I am a hill.
Hi, this is Matt with a concert billboard for Sunday, November 11th, Veterans Day, in case you were wondering. Eugene Van Beethoven will be at the Knitting Factory tonight. Tomorrow night, the Go-Go's are back together, and they're at the Ritz. Energy Orchard and Culture Shock will be at Woody's that same night. Tuesday, the Cocteau Twins and Mazzy Star will be at the Beacon Theater, but they're sold out. Jazz Butcher and the Blue Aeroplanes will be at the Marquee, and Kristen Hirsch of the Throwing Muses will be at the Knitting Factory. Wednesday, Pantera, Prong, and Mind Over Four will be at the Marquee. The Cocteau Twins and Mazzy Star move on to the Ritz. Julie Cruz will be at the Symphony Space on November 15th, Thursday night, and Lydia Lunch will be at Maxwell's. Friday the 16th, Skinny Puppy and Tank Hog will be at the Ritz. Michael Franks and David Benoit will be at the Westbury Music Fair. Paul Young will be at the Marquee. He's also there the following night. Valentine will be at Sundance, and Johnny Clegg and Savuka will be at Bay Street. Johnny Clegg and Savuka move on to the Ritz on November 17th, Saturday night, and the Horseflies join them in that show. The Scofflaws and Skinnerbox will be at Nightingales. Einstürzende, Neubauten, and Fetus Incorporated will be at the Sound Factory. Dream Theater will be at Sundance. Billy Cobham will be at IMAC. The Tribulations will be at Bay Street, and Lydia Lunch will be at the Knitting Factory. November 18th, Annihilator and Reverend will be at Sundance. On the 19th, the Water Boys will be at the Beacon Theater. They'll be there the following night also. The National Comedy Finals will be at Avery Fisher Hall in Lincoln Center, and it will be hosted by Dana Carvey and Dennis Miller of Saturday Night Live. Africa Oye, a tribute to African music featuring live African performers, will be at the Stony Brook Staller Center for the Arts. On Tuesday, November 20th, Jane's Addiction and the Buck Pets will be at the Ritz. They'll also be there the following night. Dr. John will be holding a birthday party at the Lone Star Roadhouse. Dead Can Dance will be at the Symphony Space. Water Boys will be at the Beacon Theater, of course, finishing up. On November 21st, the Railway Children and the Heartthrobs will be at the Marquee. Zebra will be at Sundance. They'll also be there on Friday the 23rd. Moja Naya will be at Bay Street. Jane's Addiction and the Buck Pets, second night at the Ritz. Manitoba's Wild Kingdom will be at the Cat Club. Day after Thanksgiving, November 23rd, the Scofflaws and the Rudiments will be at Ugo's Valley. The Heartthrobs and Railway Children will be at Maxwell's. The Dead Milkmen, Mojo Nixon, and Cave Dogs will be at the Ritz, and the Resonance will be at the Beacon Theater. Naji will be at IMAC on November 24th. On November 28th, Lush will be at Maxwell's. On the 30th, Sepultura, Exhorta, and Atheist will be at Sundance. The Pixies will be at the Ritz. The Neville Brothers and Crash Vegas will be at Roseland. On December 1st, Rob Mullins will be at IMAC, The Liars will be at Maxwell's, and Danger Danger, Extreme, and Jet Boy will be at the Ritz. The Scofflaws will be at New York Avenue on Sunday, December 2nd. Concert Billboard is brought to you four times each weekday at 3 and 9 a.m., 4:30 and 10 p.m., and on weekends at 12 noon and 12 midnight. Just in case you missed anything, give us a call here at WUSB at 516-632-6901. And stay tuned to WUSB throughout the week for ticket giveaways. This is Matt here on WUSB Stony Brook, where unique sounds begin.
A position of ascendancy over others. Surge. To rise and fall actively. Power, physical might, mental or moral vigor. Surge, a sweeping onward like a wave of the sea or emotion. Power, force or energy used to do work, the time rate at which work is done. Surge, a transient, sudden increase of current in an electrical circuit. Power surge.
Caution, this habit may be considered offensive.
Undefined. Let's get ready for the power surge, folks. Here it comes. In a horrific tumult of madness, we begin.
We'll be right back. going back to 1986 with Nuclear Assault here on the Power Surge, 90.1 WSB in Stony Brook, bringing you the best of death, speed, and thrash metal. The Raz here, hanging out, thrashing out, I don't know. We have some surprises for you tonight. You're just going to have to hang out and find out what they are. Napalm here, and Devastation of Combat. Cool Tranquility, Napalm, Devastation.